Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington, an original shark from the hit television show Shark Tank, and you're listening to the Underdog Podcast. I've been too high up to fall, question marks, what's up with y'all? All we know is overtime, barking like some underdogs. All we know is
overtime, barking like some underdogs. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Underdog Podcast. Today, I have an incredible guest here with me. Monica, how are you?
I am wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Man, it has been a hell of a day. Like I was just saying to you right before this call, there was literally an earthquake in Massachusetts. Like, how is this a thing? How is this real life? I thought that only happened in like California, right? And here we are. And I have the privilege and the honor of getting to meet you and hearing all about you and your story. And I'm just so excited.
Excellent.
With this, I always love to reel it kind of all the way back, Monica. And because I really love to understand like the beginning of the story, if you will, right? Your story. So as a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Like, don't believe anything you heard of me as a child, please.
What was the dream way back when?
When I was a child, I was like a menace to society. And now I have four kids and they're menace to societies and they get it so honestly. I was on with my oldest son now and we were just laughing at that. When I was a child, I was a very fun, interesting child. That's for sure. I certainly was independent and probably a born entrepreneur. And I always had these business ideas and I always had different presentations and things that I always wanted to do. You know, like I always knew I wanted to do something amazing. And I never could really pinpoint what exactly that was, but I was always like the boss and I was always in charge of making plays happen and putting on garage sales and selling things for money and arranging meetings with the mayor and having a flight pass set up in light bright. I was nine. Like I just did weird, weird things. I think I was always just this really big, big thinker. And that was kind of me as a child. And because I was always such a big thinker and I was always sort of thinking of things really out of the ordinary really, really kind of was a little bit boring for me. So I was never really a great in school. I would do fine in my academics, but I just found school very boring, very straightforward, very run of the mill. And I always kind of thrived in more like an independent, creative type of atmosphere. So I was always kind of wondering what I was going to do. And I think a lot of teachers wonder, what the heck will she end up doing? And it's funny because I actually ended up back at all of these schools that these people used to have to teach me at as a mentor, as an educator, and as a role model for the students, which is always kind of pretty funny when you kind of come back full circle. But by the time I went to university, and the original goal really was to be a family and marriage therapist. But it wasn't just to get into counseling and to helping people. I was idolizing this radio talk show host called Dr. Laura Schlesinger, who was just a say it as it is kind of gal and was determined to save the heart of all these families. So for me, family has always been very, very important. And I really always wanted to help people. I wanted to change lives. And I really, really wanted to help save families and like really help people in family and marriage. I guess I'm like, love or something. I don't know. So that was my original intention. And here we are today, right?
I love that. Well, it was so hilarious. You were like explaining certain things that you were bored with school. Like you did fine in academics and did great, but like you were just there like, oh, that was literally me as a child. I was like, why am I in this institution? I'm questioning my math teacher. Like, when the hell am I ever going to use this?
She's said like, all the time.
I would just, you know, I used to get detention from questioning priests on certain things because I was at Catholic school. So like big thinkers. And so I just love the parallels that we both have in having that kind of big picture view. And
I think we would have been the best of friends.
Literally. Yeah, because I was like, I would just like fall asleep in class on certain things and I'd get in trouble in English class. And I'm just like, I don't understand how this makes sense. Like, why do I have to pay attention to English? Isn't that what we have dictionaries for? And now it's like, it was like the rebel kid that was just questioning everything, And then I studied transcendentalism when we were in lit class, literature class. And I remember it being like the most incredible thing I had ever learned. And then I was like fully engaged in that class because that actually made sense. So like it's hilarious, like our parallels of like kind of like how it's manifested, and then now you get to go back, right, and showcase all the beautiful things that you're doing and have it come full circle. That is so cool. Oh my gosh.
Well, I think it's important to be honest with these stories too, because when you talk to tell like inspire people, not everyone liked school and not everyone is an A plus student, and that's okay.
Right.
So I think we really, I believe everyone has gifts and everyone has strengths. And rather than people just focusing on, are you conventionally successful? We need to focus on people as individuals and what their strengths are and what gifts they have to give back. So like I said, I have four kids and it's like I gave birth to four completely different human beings. I couldn't imagine more opposite people. And I really, really remember like how I felt, then, and still I'm largely the same today, and how a lot of entrepreneurs were similar to you and I as kids, and how not to sweat the small stuff and really how that's okay. And, you just sounded exactly like my third son when you said, what am I ever going to need English for? I hear that all the time. I'm like, well, actually, quite a few things, but I understand, where they're coming from because I remember what it's like. And I think everyone needs to realize if you're not succeeding the conventional way, it is okay. There is still a way for you that you can like thrive and really carve your own path and move forward. You're probably more likely to be successful if, you are a rule breaker because you're more likely to break the rules and really extend those boundaries rather than people who've lived inside the box their whole lives. Those are the people that often find it more difficult to move past fear.
Absolutely. I love that. And it's like the outcasts of society are the ones that question everything, are the ones that go on to change the world, which I love, which I love. And I would love to get into your story of like how you got to where you got to like today. So walk me through kind of the journey. How did it all go down? Was it, like going to college? Like what was your path, if you will?
Well, my path was a bit crazy and a bit interesting, that's for sure. And it started off like the conventional path. I did get through high school and I did get accepted to university. I finished that 4-year degree and I did not get accepted into grad school for the psychotherapy family marriage therapy program that I was in, which I'm very, very grateful for because I kind of went on a school to work transition that is very, very common. Usually, when you're in that field, they want you to have life experience, but then also they want you to have a degree. And to get a degree, they want you to have life experience. So I kind of went back and forth and back and forth and trying to interview for different jobs, worked at different sort of companies and try to figure things out and thought, you know what? I'm going to do what I've always done. I'm going to go on travel and figure this out. So I've always traveled. I've lived on every ocean in the world and, of course, never gone in any of them. And thought I'm going to go to Australia and I'm just going to go to Australia and travel around. So I was traveling around and had some crazy jobs there. And I actually met my husband there, believe it or not.
Wow.
And so we met in Australia and I wanted to stay longer. And so I'm like, I'm just going to get a master's degree. And so I ended up going to school there for 2 years. And of all things, guess what I got my degree in? A teacher. God help us all. I think I would be bad teacher, like Cameron Diaz in the movie Bad Teacher. I tell that's seriously me when I'm teaching. So funny. But yes, so I did get a 2-year degree in teaching, and I absolutely loved that program. It was so fascinating. It was so interesting. I was at a really amazing establishment. It was such an interesting 2-year program. I got into curriculum development slightly after that. But during that degree, we also got married and we did have our first child. And after we had our first child, it was in the middle of exams. So I literally had to have a baby, write exams, and everyone went off and did this 12-week practicum in a classroom for 12 weeks. And I could not because I had a newborn baby, but it had to get done in the same year. Otherwise, I forfeited this entire degree. So I went, and when he was 8 months old, I ended up doing my 12-week practicum. And I was pretty young. I was in my mid-20s. And I didn't know anything about anything at this point. You know, like I didn't know I was a new mom, I'm a new wife, I'm a student. Now I'm trying out this teaching thing. So all I knew was I was selling myself short in every single area. And I was actually having physical repercussions because I was selling myself short in every single area. And it really was hard for me to separate myself from my child to go teach other people's children every single day. So I didn't know much, but I knew that I was going to finish my degree. And I knew that I was not going to work full time, that I want to be a full time mom. I could work part time, but I need that balance. And my first priority is being a full time mom. And so my husband agreed. He said, that was fine. That's great. And then he also agreed to do a global move back here to Toronto, Ontario, and where we had another child. And we stuck true to this goal, like of me being a full-time mom. It's very expensive to live here. I know in your area, it's pretty darn expensive as well. And we were on one salary. He was making great money, but it was kind of like financial suicide in the sense that, you know, raising a family on one salary, and we were homeowners at this time as well, was a little bit difficult. So I took money and I took it to the forefront. And I did everything the traditional way. I was your number one money student. I was your Susie Orman's teacher's pet. I was the wealthy barber's number one. And I did everything. I saved my 10%. I bought term insurance. I did everything they told me to. And 2008 came and all of our savings just went goodbye. And that was my light bulb moment that, okay, I don't think that I know what I'm doing. And I don't think that the people who told me to do this knew what they're doing. We got to start doing something different. And we didn't know what, but we knew we had to do something different. And we just happened to read Rich Dad Poor Dad at that time. And it won't teach you about real estate. It brought real estate on our radar. It's not going to teach you how to invest in real estate. That book won't. But it did teach us that traditional financial planning is just completely backwards. And, you know, everything that Robert Kiyosaki says, I believe, is largely true. And what really kind of got my goat, to speak, and what really kind of lit my fire was when I realized after we lost all these earnings that I was the financial plan. Like, if we ever wanted to be able to retire, if we ever wanted to help our kids out, if we ever wanted to make more money every month, it was up to me to have to go to work full time alongside my husband. And what kind of society do we live in that takes 2 6-figures salaries to get by? And that was just kind of like the moment we were just like, this is wrong. So the pain was enough with that loss in 2008 that we said, you know what, we're going to do something different. Let's do something different. And that's when we picked real estate as our vehicle to move forward and achieve our wealth goals, which were, one, be able to help our kids out. Two, be able to make more money every month so I could stay home with the kids and this could be a salary. And then three, for us to obviously have those long-term goals, such as retirement.
I love that. And I feel like every time I hear Rich Dad Poor Dad, it's like that's like the real estate Bible, right? Like that's the one I think it's the biggest thing is understanding the mindset, right? The mindset comes in and then like everything shifts, right? Then you can just figure it out, right? But I love how Rich Dad Poor Dad lays the framework and the mindset kind of mentality on the liabilities, assets, and all that, that like completely shifts your mindset because, like you said, to have 2 6-figure salaries and not be able to make it is insanity. You know what I mean? Like, what kind of world are we living in, right?
And that
So,
is our world that we live in. And people think they're doing the right thing by studying hard and going to school and getting jobs and trading time for money. All they're doing is losing all their money in taxes. I'll never forget my husband worked all this overtime, so much overtime. He's working so hard around the clock. Brought him a check, goes, oh my God, you have to look at this. It's the same as if I worked like 20 hours less. Like, what is this? You know, and at least he was smart enough to realize that most people don't. They need more money, they get another job. Now they have two jobs and then they're taxed the entire amount. You're no further ahead. This is why I often joke and say, I can't afford to work. I can't afford to work.
which is crazy, right? Like it's crazy, but the tax code, and I tell everybody this, I'm like, tax code is created for entrepreneurs. It's created. America was founded on entrepreneurs. It was built for entrepreneurs, right? The system was also created by entrepreneurs for their benefit, some, right? So once you realize this, you can go ahead and take charge of your financial destiny, if you will. And I think financial literacy is huge. We were just talking prior to that, this month is actually Financial Literacy Month, and that's exactly what you both stepped into. So I'd love to hear how the journey kind of started with you after, basically kickstarting your real estate career and really diving deep into where you are today and kind of the work that you guys are doing up to date.
Well, this was 14 years ago. So I know now it's great because there's like a real estate events on every corner and you got all these communities and support. There was nothing back then. I was lucky I found Rich Dad Poor Dad. That wasn't even that popular of a book back then. And so when we started out, we were largely unaided, but we were determined to try it out and move forward. And I think through real estate investing, learning is through doing. It's really hard. You could learn and go on YouTube and watch all these videos. Until you actually do it, you're not going to really learn how to do it. And if you do it unaided, you're going to make mistakes. We made $1 million in mistakes our first 3 years as real estate investors. That's our book, Real Estate Mistakes. We actually published it in 2016, and it was just republished in the new cover last year. And we just went out there. We did over 100 deals our first year as real estate investors and continued that pace in years 2 and 3. After buying a few properties on our own, we thought it'd be a great idea to invest in our real estate education, which we spent a lot of money on, and then went in hyper overdrive and were lost all control and senses of anything. And became these supersonic real estate investors. And that's not the way to do real estate investing. We just did way too much too soon. We were doing every strategy under the sun in every area. And it wasn't until we scaled back and really figured out what the true wealth building mechanism and systems are to build wealth in real estate and what people, because not everyone has to be a full-time real estate investor, but every American has to have real estate in their portfolio. And because we got so excited in the why, because real estate investing can be very exciting, we lost track of our why, which was me being a full-time stay-at-home mom, me helping, the kids with their university and college, and saving for retirement. We were just doing real estate for the sake of doing real estate at that point and running this insane business. The good news is that we did make a lot of money. We lost a lot of money, but the knowledge through the mistakes that we gained have made us excellent consultants. And now when we advise others on investing in real estate or building wealth through real estate, we don't just focus on, being supersonic, hyperactive real estate investors. We take a less is more approach. We really do believe real estate is the number one investment tool out there to help people build wealth. And that every American needs to have real estate in their portfolio, but they can transform their entire portfolio with 1 to 3 properties. And you don't have to do it on your own. We have a community that can hold your hand and help you through it. And there's also other great investors out there that people can partner with too, if they know how to vet investments and grow their capital passively as well. So there's a lot of different things. I think financial literacy is huge. We just started our financial literacy challenge for Financial Literacy Month. And we teach people everything they need to know about real estate investing, but we also focus on the other like aspects that the top 2% are all utilizing in their wealth plans. And you mentioned that earlier. There's these different people that are utilizing all these sort of tools. We want that to be accessible to every American. You were mentioning like people just don't know about it. Well, if everyone knows about it and it's common knowledge, then, and this is what we're trying to get back into the schools as well. So you could start with kids, you could start with young adults, you could even train adults. Tell me about real estate. Tell me about mortgages and strategic leverage to help people with insurance, how they can utilize insurance to build wealth, how they can structure themselves properly, how they don't have to lose all their money in taxes and do those tax saving tips like you said. And also how to do proper estate plans. And that's the kind of information in RPI education we're always trying to give people. So then they have this knowledge and they could follow it according to their own personalized wealth plan and achieve their own personalized goal but more importantly, solve whatever their money problem is. And it's normally not making enough money every month. They want to help their kids out, become homeowners, because everyone's always worried about the kids, as well as pay for their school. And they want to be able to retire. I just couldn't believe that stat. I was rereading the stat. It says that 82% of Americans only have $48,000 of retirement savings.
Insane.
It is crazy.
It's such a crazy thing. And like, you know, I want to peel it back a little bit with the mistakes, right? Because everyone wants to get into real estate and then they try to do a million things under the sun and then they fail, not fail. They learn their lessons because there's no such thing as failure. Fail forward. Exactly. Right. So it's just your lessons. But what's incredible is learning, like what you learn from that is tremendous. So what you were saying about the top three mistakes that you've made. So, you know, for anyone who's listening that's interested in the real estate game, right? Or maybe who's in it and is like, again, forgot about their why and dove so far into real estate that they're kind of all over the place, right? Which is a lot of people that I know. So what would be your top three mistakes that investors make, and then like top few tips that you think are necessary? Whether it's beginner, intermediate, you can interlock the two. I mean, what are your thoughts?
It's okay. This is for everyone, no matter where they're at, whether they're beginner, whether they're advanced, whatever. Really, one is, know your why for sure. Like, know what you're doing this for in the first place. If you don't know your why, you're going to take the second mistake and you're going to be unfocused. You're going to have that shiny penny syndrome. And this is, people think they can YouTube their real estate education. And I coach people like this all the time. These are the unsuccessful students, or the students that actually end up coming to a lot of free stuff, or, you know, a lot of calls, or they're on the fence students, because they are so interested in what everyone's doing, they forgot about what they want to do because they don't know what their why is. So if you don't know what your why is, then you don't know what you're not going to have any focus. Because we always say your real estate goal has to match your why, and your why could be specific. Your why can change. Like, so for example, when I achieved my first why to be a stay-at-home mom, I had to like replace that income that I would make as a full-time teacher. When that was gone, I could move on to a second why. So your why can change. So you're continuously moving up, and you can add to it as well. But because of that why, you know, that really serves largely as an anchor and keeps me laser focused on whatever strategy I'm going to do. Because even though the income's replaced, I'm also a full-time mom. I'm not going to be traveling the world doing real estate developments hither tither and speaking at all these events. I know how I have to reach people and do things because I want to be still, you know, at home. So that's really the anchor. And then the third thing is not using a coach, like going unaided. That's the third biggest mistake. Where was my coach when we were in our construction field, going belly up, losing millions of dollars, learning to do this on my own after taking some 3-day course, because someone told me I could? Just because they charge you a lot of money for that stuff, it could be great information, but information is nothing until you put it into application. And you need coaches. You need people who have done what you want to do, that they have done that before. And that's why I am so grateful for all those different opportunities or you know, developments and projects that we were involved in, even though some things went wrong on our own money, thank God, it was just us, it never affected anyone else. That was the purpose of real estate mistakes, is that we don't want anyone to ever have to make a mistake again. At the very least, buy the book, it's a tell-all, and just learn these common sense little things that we wish someone was just there to point out. And it's funny because you see people making these same mistakes and they seem so obvious over and over and over again. So those are the three: know your why, be focused, and have a coach, no matter what stage you're at. You always want someone who's farther ahead of you. You want a coach that's doing what you want to do. You should have a multitude of coaches. The more successful you are, the more coaches that you should have. Because if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Amen. And that's with coaches. That's how you turn decades into days, right? Like, there is no other time. You want to collapse time, that's the way to do it. That's your cheat code, is coaches. And you've got to invest in them, right? There's got to be an equal energy exchange there. You know, some people are like, oh, but it's so expensive. It's like, okay, but what's your ROI going to be? on
The
investing.
ROI should always be 10 times minimum the amount that you're investing in coaching. And not all coaches are expensive, and some are not. I personally feel that a lot of the coaches in the real estate world, and the way that they sell the cookie cutter courses and the coaching can be extremely expensive is because they're catering to such a small number of people. Only 6% of people in the US invest in real estate.
6%.
Coaching is a billion-dollar industry. Education is a billion-dollar industry. People can make money off anything. You can make money off selling pencils if you want. But it's what makes sense, for your learning. Like, and is it applicable? Just because you spend more, it doesn't mean that's a better course. There is no secret solution out here. This is never like I find myself up against a lot of the get rich quick, no money, low money down, smokes and mirrors, this and that. You have to do the work. If you want the results, you have to do the work. The faster you want to go, the more one-on-one coaching you want to have, and the price will go up for the coaching, but it doesn't have to be, everything is negotiable. It doesn't mean just because a $100,000 coach is going to be a lot better than a $10,000 coach.
Right, absolutely. And then some of like the biggest tips on the real estate investing side, just like for investors that might be on the intermediate level, like they know the kind of their flow in real estate, but or maybe those that are just starting. I mean, whichever one kind of comes to you, like what are some of the most important things that you had learned in your journey? And it can even be financial literacy too for real estate investors. I mean, whatever it may be, that would be helpful.
Well, the first thing I think that's really, really important is, the money. The money is always the most difficult thing to find in real estate investing. And you cannot do real estate investing for no money, low money down. If you're doing these creative financing strategies and techniques, and everyone loves to talk about OPM, other people's money, you better know what you're doing. Because at that point, you're running a real estate business and you better have already done that yourself. Because there will become a time as a real estate investor, if that's what you want to do, that you should not have to spend your own money because you're operating a business where you help grow other people's money. But you have to do it yourself first and show that you know what to do. So I think strategic leverage is huge. People need to learn how leverage works, how mortgages work, and how real estate really is one of the best investments because it's the only investment that you can leverage to that extent. So you will need some money, but you do not need as much money as you think. When I started out, before we started, I thought real estate was reserved for rich people. I thought I had to buy the house next door, and I thought you'd have to buy the whole property. Like for what it's around, I didn't even know you could get a mortgage on investment properties. And I didn't even know what my mortgage options were. And I certainly didn't know that I was able to utilize existing assets that I had from my Susie Orman days to get started investing in real estate. Use money from a primary residence, use money from, your registered retirement accounts or other savings vehicles. I had no idea. There's a lot of money available. A lot of people are richer than they think. So there's certainly ways. So that's one thing that people really need to know. The second thing people need to know, this is another huge mistake we made, is never compromise on area. Cheaper is not better in real estate because even cheap properties are going to be expensive. So people get sidetracked because they feel I have no money. So I'm going to look in these low growth areas and I'm going to buy these cheap properties. Okay, so they're cheap then, and they're going to be cheap in 100 years from now. And you're not going to make any money, and you're not going to be having renters because if they're so cheap, those renters would probably buy them anyways. So people really need to figure out, focus on economic fundamentals, focus on high growth areas so they can take advantage of the natural appreciation component of real estate. Now, we always mark this at 5-6% for natural appreciation. But if you're in high growth areas, you're in, like, say, the Atlanta market, you're in some Texas markets, you're in, it's not uncommon for these areas to be upwards 20, 30, 60% in good times. But we don't pay attention to that because real estate's in 7-year cycles. So you want to look at a place where that's always going to have people. It's always, you're always going to have customers, you know, for your product, because your tenants are your customers. If you're a land developer, you want to be building in areas with these strong economic fundamentals because you need the migration. You need the people. We just built a subdivision in Marion County, Florida. Population growth of 300,000 people, 30,000 new jobs were just created. So these are the sort of things that you want to be looking at as a real estate investor. The third thing you're going to have to do with mortgage rates, that the way they are, is real estate is not about buying a property and renting it out and getting cash flow every month and living off the cash flow. If you want to do that, you are going to have 100 properties, especially in this mortgage rate. And having 100 properties is like having 100 kids. And I have four kids, and that's hard enough. You don't want 100 properties. Or if you have 100 properties, you should be managing a fund. You should have a syndication or a fund, and that's your real estate business. And you're going to sell this to a publicly traded company, or you're going to manage it that way. You're going to have a private investment REIT. It's not about you, because that's the only way that you really can make that kind of wealth in regards to cash flow, even with multifamily. Just more units does not mean more cash flow necessarily. Sometimes the units are renting a less. So you really need to know your numbers, you need to know your ROI. Sweat equity, which is forced appreciation, that is your best friend. And if you're focusing on more expensive markets, it doesn't have to be totally expensive, but a little more. It's not going to be like $5,000 for a place in Detroit, but you're able to put the sweat equity towards it and actually increase the ROI. And this is where you can get 110% return on your investment, strategic leverage from that investment, pull that money back out, and you can repeat the cycle and put that towards your wealth goals yourself.
It's incredible. Oh my God. I love all of this too. I'm always learning, you know. I'm like, when I hear it from someone else too, I'm just like, I think about my investments. I'm like, yep, I got to get more centered and more catered to this. And it's like the migration and the appreciation. I mean, these are the cheat codes to really create real estate investments that sustain over time and all of the things. So I love that. I love that advice. Oh my gosh. And this is my favorite question, Monica. And I save the best for last always, which is, you know, what would your older self tell your younger self based on what you know now? And it could be business, it could be personal, it could be anything.
My older self would tell my younger self, create your best life and just don't sweat it. It all works out. And you can't lose until you quit. As long as you keep going, you're not losing. Like, you just got to keep going, stay focused, stay confident, persevere, and keep your eye on the prize.
Absolutely. I love that. I know we sweat the small stuff so much, right? And then you grow up and you're like, who cares? Right? Like, who really cares at the end of the day, right? Like, it's like all this time and attention that you put onto certain things and this pressure you put on yourself, right? It's like you just really grow up and you realize you're just like, why did I even put so much like thought into that? Like, I should have just gone out and done it, right? So I love that. I absolutely love that, Monica. Oh my gosh. And I would love to hear what's going on in your world in like the next few months, like all of the things. Like, what's going on in your world? I know this month is Financial Literacy Month, which is amazing. And you mentioned the challenge earlier.
Yes, no, we're having a financial literacy challenge throughout the month of April. I could share a link if people want to jump in the challenge. We have different challenge every day that share with people. And we have a lot of tools from our RPI education learning platform that's available for people, because we really are on a mission to fill the wealth gap. We want every American to start implementing these top 2% learning mechanisms into their daily lives. And we figure if we could change that and make that standard, the wealth gap will be filled and people are not going to be experiencing those problems anymore. They're not going to be not making enough money every month. They're not going to be able to not afford to retire, and they're going to be able to help their kids out. So we really need to help out that next generation for sure. So we're excited about that. We are coming to Texas in May, which is super exciting. So we're going to be meeting with one of our development partners there, walking some properties in Houston, walking some apartment syndications in San Antonio, and exhibiting at the Houston Franchise Show and having a networking event there. So that's super exciting. And we also have our Spring into Action campaign. So everything can be found for us on our website at rpieducation.com. And we're always here just to help people. And I hope to learn more about you too, Pamela. And you're doing amazing things as well. So I'm hoping to do some business with you and help spread your amazing mission to help solve the housing crisis, making housing available to all Americans as well. Because I think that's what it's really about. It has to be about passion. If at the end of the day your goal is money, you're never going to be satisfied because numbers are infinite. So
Amen.
if your goals are not equated to a purpose, you're never going to live the life you truly deserve. And we all deserve to live our best life.
Absolutely. Amen to that. I love that. And I love all the events that you guys have going on and like just your mission too and your heart in really providing accessible housing throughout the country. I mean, I think that's the most integral part of all of this, right? Like, you know, giving the power back to the middle class. I mean, more than 80% of the average American's wealth is in their real estate, right? In the home that they own and live in and reside. And if they've got investment properties, then that's amazing, right? So helping create more of that financial access and that investment kind of perspective. I know you and I walk on the same path with that. That's the whole reason I started my container company. You know, I was like, I need to do more at scale so we can create more, you know, for the world and create equal
Your
opportunity.
container company sounds phenomenal because it makes housing a lot more accessible. The cost to build per square foot is pretty standard across the board. It's very expensive. And depending where you are when you pair it with land, sometimes it's unachievable for people. The container shipping industry is just an innovative way because soon as like we were talking about that sweat equity component, when you buy land, and then as soon as you service that land, you've increased the value. As soon as you put that structure on there, you've increased that value. And it's just an amazing way that people can start building wealth for themselves. And you can get mortgages on these once the services are put in. They are
Absolutely.
mortgageable, unlike other products, like say mobile homes,
Oh, yeah.
which is amazing because it is considered a permanent. It's a permanent fixture. And that is an incredible because the cost to build can be costly. This can help people, and they can also build on the container as well, which is phenomenal. It doesn't even have to be a single family. So what you're doing is incredible. I think we should hit the road and
I'm
get
totally.
housing for people. Because if people can find make that achievable and they're able to utilize they have a place over their head, a safe place to live, a clean, form of mind to work from. And then they can strategic leverage that asset and buy another investment property elsewhere or even add another property there and make that their investment model. That could be solving their money problems. This could be changing their financial life because the traditional way just doesn't work anymore. And the middle class is disappearing. There's going to be the top 2%, and then there's going to be poverty. And where do you want to be? Everyone can be at the top if they just have access to this information, to this knowledge. And it doesn't have to be costly, it doesn't have to be expensive. You just have to want it, and you have to really want to change your life. You have to want to be the change. Say no more. Today, I'm starting today. This is my life starts today. I'm going to start learning these specific items today, and I choose wealth.
Amen to everything that you just said, Monica. 1,000% right on the money, right on the money with that. I mean, there is a way to do good for business, for people, for the planet, all of the things, right? And our alignment is right there, right alongside each other, which I think is so beautiful. And I'm so excited to explore that in the future with you. I think that's going to be absolutely incredible. And the container industry is incredible. I mean, you know, creating a way, a streamlined process that's super simple for people, 8 to 12 weeks, and we can bring it right to your site and you just connect it and go. I mean, it's a really, really cool process. So I'm honored to be kind of the steward of that, and to work with other developers to really create something incredible for the United States and beyond, right? And beyond. So it's just a true blessing. And I love what you're doing in the education space and the investing space to help more people become aware, because knowledge is power at the end of the day, right? So this Financial Literacy Month, I mean, guys, if you're listening, please tune in to everything that Monica has got going on, because this stuff is so powerful. Knowledge really genuinely is power. And when you come together and you collaborate, that's just a whole nother level of magic. So, Monica, I'm so grateful for you. Thank you so much for being here today. You are incredible. I adore your story. I adore your mission and all of the things. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
So that's it for today's episode of Underdog. Catch us next week, always dropping on Thursdays. And remember, if you're interested in real estate or want to learn how to create more money and magic in your life, check out meetwithpamela.com and let's chat. Sending you so, so much love. All we know is overtime, working like some underdogs.